Welcome back to the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. This is National Teacher Appreciation Month, and we're having a candid conversation about teachers, their classes, the children they teach. My guests are Gianni Clarkson, an eighth grade social studies teacher at Howard University Middle School of Mathematics and Science, Kimberly Worthy, seventh and eighth grade reading and English teacher at Friendship Woodbridge International School, and Linda Ahrens, high school African-American studies teacher and instructional coach at Charles Herbert Flowers High School in Prince George's County. If you have a question or a comment about teaching, teachers, schools, what's going on in the classroom, give us a call. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Before the break, we were talking to Gwen. Quickly, Gwen, finish your point about jazz and teaching.
Right. Okay. And so after exposing them to various genres of music, they begin to request music and they begin to ask for jazz. I moved from jazz to classical. Mm-hmm. They didn't even know that, you know, there were black musicians who were famous.
Okay.
And, you know, play classical music.
But what do you teach? Gwen, let me ask you, what do you teach? Are you a music teacher?
No.
Okay, so what do you teach?
No. For 14 years, I was a visiting instructor.
Okay, but help me with that.
I taught almost every grade. I taught mathematics.
Okay.
And when I taught math, I used jazz and other mediums of music to, you know, encourage children to work within 20 minutes and focus.
Okay.
So the jazz played and they could tap. So it met all of their learning styles.
Okay.
It met the visual, not the kinesthetic.
Okay.
You know.
Well, Gwen, I've got other calls, but thank you so much for helping. I wish I had had you for a teacher. I'm a Marcellus man myself, thank you so much. I appreciate it. Kimberly, why did you become a teacher?
Why did I become a teacher? Simply because of my educational experience. I'm from here, Washington, D.C., and I attended Roots Activity Learning Center, which is an African-centered school. And people assume that that means that everything is about the culture, the clothes, the names, the languages. And actually, there is a very specific pedagogical approach, African pedagogical approach. And I went to Spelman, and when I was in class...
Yeah, I gave it a side eye, but you know, yeah, Spelman women are great.
Yes.
Go ahead.
But this class was actually in Morehouse, African psychology, and in that class we had to read an article by Dr. Edwin Nichols, and he's living here in Washington D.C. Organizational psychologist who researched cultural relevant teaching, the pedagogical styles. And talked about the African logic systems, African epistemological styles, learning styles.
I love those grad school $20 words that my mother often calls. My mother's an educator, too. But for those of us who don't have the benefit, break it down for me real quick.
So the African logic system would be the worldview is the whole. So seeing everything from the whole. And traditionally in this country, schools teach from the parts first and then go to the whole. But our African minds see the whole first. So teaching holistically versus dichotomizing math, science, English, whatever, teaching it as a whole is easier for us to comprehend from the earlier levels. And then our epistemological styles, like Gwen said, kinesthetic, music, rhythm, there are all these different ways that we learn that is not inferior, it's just different.
Right. Yeah.
And so then the last one was the axiology, the value. An African number one value is relationships.
Right.
And so when I was learning, when we were reading this article in class, I said, I was taught like this at Roots.
See.
At Roots. And I felt like I knew what made the difference.
Mm-hmm.
And immediately when I left, I went into the classroom. And my first year, I started in Brooklyn. And
New York?
Brooklyn, New York.
Okay.
And it was so wonderful, the experience. So I knew I was born to teach. I used to work at the middle school,
yeah.
And Howard Middle School, and my former director, Miss Sue White, she said, you know, you were born to teach. You're just a natural born teacher.
Well, let me go back to the phone lines real quick. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. John, calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling, John. What's on your mind? John, are you there? Give me a call back if you can. Let's go to Tershea. Is that correct? Tershea? Okay, Tershea. What's on your mind?
My question is, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is, like, I have a 16-year-old son, and some of his, you know, he's had six classes. Half of his teachers are good, and the other half I'm not too sure about. They don't seem as committed. Like, if my son needs extra help, you know, like back in the day, if you need extra help, you can stay after school, you can come early, something like that. But the teachers today, they're like, no, I don't have time. I don't have time for that. Maybe he can come at lunchtime. My son tells me he goes at lunchtime and they're not there.
Mm-hmm. So what's your question?
So my question is, when you're in a school, like especially in D.C., and you have to go, it goes by your neighborhood school, should I look for another school? Should I try to, because I've been to the classroom, I've sat in the classroom with the teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And some teachers are afraid of the students, like one of the teachers said that's on. Some of the, they're like terrified. So I'm like, I don't know what to do. Should I?
Well, let me see what my panel has to say. Go ahead, Kim.
Tershea, I would say, if you were in that situation, what would you want your parents to do for you? Mm-hmm. And if it means finding another school, I think you should go above and beyond for your child. You are instilling in him his self-worth and his value. And if you accept mediocrity, he will accept mediocrity for himself. There mm-hmm. are fabulous schools here in Washington, D.C., and you have the power. You have the power. You have to stand up for your child. And if there's another school out there, find it. But or before you take that step, you can also talk to the teacher yourself. Go in and speak with the teacher and then try to put some things in place with the teacher. Then go to the principal. But if not, yes, there are. But what I would not do is just let this ride.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Well, thank you so much, Tershea. Good luck to you. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Kim just made an interesting point about choice. We've been hearing a lot about school choice during this past 6 to 7 months, and also we've also seen a growth across this country in charter schools. I'll put this to you, Linda, and then Gianni. I'd like to hear from you. What are your thoughts, first of all, about the discussion about school choice, and also are charter schools good for public schools, bad for public schools, or somewhere in the middle?
I would definitely say somewhere in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
There are some really good ones. There are some really poor ones where the students are really not being served. I am concerned about people who want to take money away from public schools, because most of our children end up being in public schools, and it's important that they have good teachers in those schools. Public schools, we don't have options about who we take. We have to take everybody.
Mm-hmm.
We have to love everybody. A lot of the rules that we have to follow, you may not have to follow in a charter school. So it might make it a little easier for you. Parents sign contracts and say they're going to do certain things. And that's great. And some of those schools come out really well with their students. But public schools in many places are doing a really good job. Our school had a 91% graduation rate last year. So what I know is that our students, the ones that look like me, can be taught. They can do well. They can go on to college or careers and be ready for their future. Is everything perfect every day with every student there? No. But there are good things that are coming out of public schools. I wish there was a little bit more autonomy. in public schools. I think they used to be. A lot of the things that I used to be able to do, I can't quite do it the same way anymore. But as Jelani was saying, it's about your relationship with students, your relationship with parents.
Mm-hmm.
It's important that kids know that you care and that you provide them with opportunities that they may not get anywhere else. And they do come back and appreciate the fact that people took out the time to do some extra things for them.
Mm-hmm. Gianni, talk to me your thoughts about school choice. There's so much discussion about that. How would you define it? And is that the wave of the future for public school systems?
I think the wave of the future is that parents deserve an equal opportunity to choose the best school possible for their child. I think that if in an open competition market, I think what happens is that you are making school systems compete for students. And also that there are who is the biggest benefactor of that are the parents. I say this all the time. I feel that sometimes schools work in the bad McDonald's mindset. Let me explain. So in my neighborhood, right, there's two McDonald's. There's the McDonald's that's closer. It's really bad. Mm-hmm. There's the McDonald's a little further away. It's really good. You know what happens? We drive past the bad McDonald's to get to the good McDonald's. The issue isn't the good McDonald's. The issue isn't the bad McDonald's. It's the issue that all McDonald's should be good. Mm-hmm. The issue is that all schools should be schools of choice. And I mean by that is that all schools should be great schools. No matter if you go charter, if you go public, all schools should be great schools. There's a website which is called greatschools.org. That website alone is sad because it says that there are therefore bad schools and there are great schools. But if everyone's being given the same exact thing, if 2 + 2 = 4 over here and 2 + 2 = 4 over there, then why is there such a discrepancy in the quality of education? I think the main thing is that we want to make sure that all schools are great schools. As an educator, that's what matters to me the most, that all schools are great schools.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Michael, calling from Silver Spring, what's on your mind?
Good evening, all of you folks. Just wanted to question the panelists with regard to standardized testing. My fiance is a Prince George's County public school kindergarten teacher and very into, obviously, early childhood and development. And I see the frustration sometimes in her in the way that they create these standardized tests and they apply them to children whose minds don't necessarily work at the pace that they're hoping. And just in a broader sense, how the standardized testing, to touch on what Linda was saying, how that affects your autonomy, how that affects your ability to be a dynamic presence with these kids. I see a lot of the frustration in her and how sometimes it curbs her ability to do the things that she wants to do. And ultimately, you know, I don't see her leaving this job anytime soon, but I can see how that kind of creates burnout. So mm-hmm. I guess that was like a long question, but one, standardized testing, two, how that affects your ability to be autonomous in the classroom, and three, how you think that affects teacher burnout.
Yeah, well, what about also, that? Because we are seeing not just, you know, Park, for example,
right,
but also we are seeing even college entrance exams being dropped in some major schools. You know, no SAT to get in. Instead,
right,
you know, send me a video to show me your personality and all of that other kind of good stuff. Boy, I wish I had that to get into school. We're going to answer Michael's question on the other side. So, Michael, hang on. You'll be able to hear it. We're also going to talk to VA West on the other side of this as well. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're talking about teachers. We'll be back in just a moment.
Oh, I'd love to answer.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We're talking to teachers. We're talking about teaching. We're talking about what's going on in the classroom. Before the break, Michael asked about standardized testing. So, Linda, you want to take a shot at that?
I agree. There's just way too much testing in the school. Constantly, you know, the teachers have to be concerned about, you know, benchmark testing, and then they take the real test, and you have to make sure that the kids know what's on the test, and they have to write it a certain way, and a lot of the content of subjects is lost.
Such as?
Generation. I'm a history teacher, so, you know, just basic facts about history that you should know, you know, where did you come from? How did this country begin? How did it treat different groups of people when they were here? Who are the presidents of the United States? Different things like that. How does our government work? What's our economic system? All of those kinds of things are things that you should have some basic knowledge about.
So what's on the test?
It's on there, but a lot of our kids are not doing well on it because they haven't been able to really make that connections between different parts of the subject matter to really understand it. In my class, I'm able to go back and make some of those connections for them. And a lot of times my students will say, well, I didn't really know that before. Now I understand where that came in, because they really don't get into the content the way they used to. I taught government a couple of years ago, and there's a test, and it's a high school requirement. So if you're teaching in a high school, it's very important that these kids pass these tests. Otherwise, they don't graduate. But it really does take away from the learning process when you're tested that much. As a child, we had like 1 week of tests every year, and then that was it. Mm-hmm. The test was given one time. If you didn't make it that day,
you were done.
You know, you know, there was summer school, and then next year they'll give it again. But, you know, there's a constant round of tests. I just did the testing calendar for our school, and this month is just massive, the amount of testing that's going on.
You were going to say something, Kim?
Yeah, I was just going to say, as a teacher, you have to understand you are a political being, and you're teaching children who are political beings. And with that, you cannot have fear at all. So wherever I've taught, yes, I've had to administer standardized tests every year, but I do not lose sight of what is important, and that is educating these children. So I can take content that's relevant to the students, that's interesting to the students, and teach them those standards that are going to be assessed on the standardized tests. So it's just really important that they are taught the content with the skills. And as a history, I taught history forever, and we were able to just put those standards in, and luckily we had autonomy. So I was able to teach the content that I knew was imperative for my students to learn. Mm-hmm. And that is who we are, the first humans on this planet,
exactly,
all the way up, the first mathematicians, scientists, everything. Mm-hmm. Have them build their self-esteem while I'm slipping in the reading standards, the math standards, the, you know, writing standards. And so they are learning for the tests, but they're learning content that's relevant to their lives and will empower them so they cannot be feared.
Yep.
Okay.
Fearful.
Michael,
Sorry.
Thank you so much for your phone call. Let me go to VA West calling from D.C. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Oh, good evening, Mr. Fisher. This is Beverly West. I am a proud MS2 parent and vice president of the PTA there. I want to say happy Appreciation Day to all of your panel, but especially to Gianni Clarkson. He is just awesome. He serves as a role model to my son for 8th grade social studies and his SGA advisor, and you could not find a better person.
Oh, wow.
And I just wanted at the DMV to know that Gianni Clarkson is awesome, and I'm looking forward to closing out the year with him, and I'm just afraid I can't find good teachers like him when I move my son to high school.
I want to keep
up the good work.
I'm going to miss you terribly next year. She's an amazing parent. I am fortunate enough to teach her scholar every day, and I'm truly, that's very humbling. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you so much for your phone call. And speaking of parents, what is it that parents need to do, or what is it that parents are not doing that they should be doing?
So it's funny, that's like the perfect segue. What an amazing person. Ms. West is awesome. But Frederick Douglass says that a child that's only educated at school is half educated. So here's the issue. is that there are sometimes scholars that we interact with in teaching who don't necessarily back up the teacher, and that causes problems. Whenever we're saying one thing in the classroom, then another thing is being said at home. Whereas we are implying that, hey, or not implying that, we're telling them your education is important. You need to do this homework. There's such a thing as deadlines. At home, if those things are not being said, then who's right and who's wrong? So what happens is that there's a huge breakdown between everyone not being on the same team. Like I said, fortunate to be at a school where I have parents that are completely there. But in the earlier part of my teaching career, that was a huge problem for me, where I had parents that were not necessarily on the same team. They would come up to me and say, well, why'd you give my child this grade? Well, they got this grade because that's the grade they deserve. Well, you know, now they can't play in the basketball game. Mm-hmm. So. and I never really understood what else would you want. I mean, and I think it's an issue of accountability across the board. We have a level of expectation that's in a classroom that's not necessarily followed in the home, and that's where the conflict, unfortunately, begins.
Okay.
And I was just going to say, historically in this country, we've been told that we were inferior, that something is wrong with our brains, we can't learn, da-da-da-da-da. We've been given a curriculum to dumb us down, so on and so forth. You have to know the history of education in this country. And because of that, there are times that everybody in this room can tell that time when we were a kid, when we sat in school and learned we were inferior. Everyone can go back to a time when we learned that we were inferior, whether a teacher's comment, a facial expression, a curriculum, whatever we're given. And so when we pass this down to our next generation that we are inferior, we end up as a community suffering with an inferiority complex. And how does that translate? Well, when a teacher comes in with high expectations and demands of their students, and then a parent wants to say, you're giving too much work, or my child is, no, you don't know my child. I'm like, no, I do know your child. You're doing too much. Yes, you're doing too much. And I say, watch with your child. Mm-hmm. Watch this.
Absolutely.
And they are shocked. And so really it's, you know, we have to trust each other. We have to really just trust each other. Like, we are here. So when I give this work, it's because the brain only learns when it pushes through a challenge. If I give him the same work that he's learned the last 8 years, he ain't learning nothing. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, I'm going to push him and or her, and I'm going to push them and push them, and they're going to learn. And just like learning how to ride a bike, you have to practice. So, yes, I'm going to give you practice at home. And you have to trust that I'm not trying to hurt your child or keep them up late at night. I just want them to practice so that when park comes and they see that scrap paper filled with that outline and that essay, and I'm sitting there like, yes, that did it.
With the fists and the elbows.
Right. Bankhead bounce.
I mean, as for what it is that trust is really built. Not just relationships that you have with your students, but relationships that you have with your parents as well.
Yes.
And reaching out during those open houses and saying, hey, this is what my expectation is. You know, this is my phone number. You can call me. And what winds up happening is that those relationships build throughout the school year. And moments like that happen, and that's great. And I think that's important for all teachers to understand, is that we're all on a team, child and parent. We're all on the same team, and that team needs to be focused on one goal, which is the success of the scholar.
Linda, you were going to say something.
Yes. We have some great parents at Charles River Flowers, been very active in the PTSA since my oldest child first went to pre-kindergarten in the district. Parents are really powerful, and they're a powerful part of the school. They really need to realize what their power is in making their child successful. Every parent sends us the best that they have. Mm. And sometimes we have to work a little harder with some children than other children, but it's worth it. And we just need to see parents understand what it is that we're trying to do. When we challenge these students to go further, to do more, They don't need to tell us, well, we didn't do this in another class, and why do you make me read so much and write so much? Because we're trying to prepare you for your future. You have to be able to think critically. You have to be able to make decisions. You need to have knowledge. Knowledge is something no one can ever take away from you. Mm-hmm. And so some of the things that the parents are doing today more often than they were when I was growing up is, you know, they're not oftentimes sitting down with their children, talking to them about their day. People are constantly on their phones. I've had parents text their children while they're in class. And I will say to them, you know, you want to give me your phone so I can tell your mama, you know, you're in class. You don't have time to be on the phone talking to them.
Wow.
Those are things that just didn't used to happen. But that's not the child's fault.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point.
You know, and so you just have to kind of learn how to work with them. Usually you can get parents to come around and understand what it is that you're trying to do. People are not in education because they're out to get children.
Mm-hmm.
You know, most people who are in education is because they love children.
Amen.
Well, I think that's a great way to end this conversation. And I want to thank all of you, Gianni Clarkson, Kimberly Worthy, and Linda Ahrens. Thank you all for doing what you do in the classroom. And I hope your stuff rubs off on some other teachers and some students, too.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
That is the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Tuesday, May 2nd. I'm Harold Fisher. You can follow me on Twitter at HFisher, WHUR, or at Daily Drum, WHUR. Now, stay tuned for The Connection with Lorna Newton. Good night.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3.